Your home for the 2008 NASCAR Sprint Cup is North Sound 1380 ESPN Radio.
Where are we with the back waxing thing?
I'm willing to do it. I mean, for the Victory Junction Gang Camp and $100,000 for the camp, are you kidding me?
How bad do you think this is going to hurt?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say about an 11.
Oh, boy.
All right, well, Smoke, your table awaits. And already,
oh my God,
we're hearing whining from the table.
I thought we were in Bristol again.
Not at Bristol, Smoke.
I'd rather be back at Bristol here.
He just figured out that the wax is hot.
Well, no, I mean, I knew it was hot, but I just asked her how hot it was, and she goes, close to boil.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and take the first strip off.
Okay.
North Sound Racing with Steve Mortland continues on North Sound 1380.
And welcome back to North Sound Racing. I took the liberty of pulling off some of my favorite openers from last year and shoving them down your throat.
So. See what happens when racers get in areas they don't know nothing about.
Well, that's true, yeah. I mean, back waxing is... I think our next guest could probably share with us a couple of back waxing stories. Let's find out. It's a pleasure to welcome the president of the Rocky Mountain Challenge Series and also the proud owner of Mike Miniker's Auto Body, located at 4660 West Chinden Boulevard in Boise, Idaho. He attended De Anza College in 1972 and 1973. A smoke-free campus, by the way, probably because this guy attended the school. Mike Miniker joins us. How are you tonight, Mike?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. You okay?
I want a Mooey Grande burger, though.
Well, you can come over on February 15th for our Daytona 500 party, and by God, I'll buy you one if you drive all the way over.
Huh. Hey, Mike, Tom Guthrow here. I'm sure you're at a location that serves Mooey Grande burgers, knowing you.
Now you got to pull the fat card, huh? I don't get it.
I wasn't even talking about the fat card. I'm talking about where you're probably at. Come on, it's Monday night. You're not at the body shop sniffing paint still.
I got to tell you, I'm a little offended. Don't you guys know that it's the second hour of 24 tonight?
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. How dare we schedule this program for such a...
Jack Bowers is on it, and I'm...
Oh, man.
I'm taping it, okay?
Okay, good.
So we're good.
We're all right. First of all, thanks for being with us tonight, Mike. It's ever since you and I met at the Warper Conference a couple months back, I knew we had to have you on at some point, and thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule tonight to join us. But explain, you are the owner, for lack of a better term, of the Rocky Mountain Challenge Series, and kind of explain your series, where you guys race at, what kind of got you started in this racket?
Well, that goes back a long ways. Maybe me and Glitzero could talk way, way back. But anyway, I race late models locally here at Meridian Speedway, and Meridian Speedway is iconic in the area. It's 55, 56 years old now. And then after I crashed a car and totaled it back in 84 or somewhere in there, and the racetrack got taken over by Kenny Hamilton in 1988, and I went to work for him as an announcer, worked there for 15 years, and then Davey Hamilton hired me to go do the Super Modified Racing League, and I did that for three seasons. At the same time that happened, Steve, my boy started racing in 98, and we started in a little mini stock deal there at Meridian Speedway, and we won the championship in 98, then we got into a modified, ran modifieds for four seasons, and then bought a late model. And as most local late model shows, it was going downhill quickly, and we had a pretty large investment because at Meridian Speedway, the rules were basically tour-type rules all the way up to tour-type motors. So, you know, we just found ourselves, I believed, in a real pickle with late model racing here in Meridian, and also... Twin Falls Magic Valley Speedway had dropped their late model program and had been running basically modifieds. And there was a little group running around called the Intermountain Late Model Series. And we decided to go run some races with those guys, and we found ourselves in a situation with them that I didn't find favorable, and I felt like the region really needed a kind of a makeover, and I thought I was up for the task, and I really wanted to provide a better platform, so to speak, for late model racing. I'm a firm believer that local late model programs probably aren't going to work at the level that the rules were at. I think that if you provide steak every other weekend for your competitor, for your fans, they come to expect it. I think that late models is specific. It's a classic cars that needs to be treated as if they're special. So that's what made me make the decision to. And you know, I didn't do anything friendly. I went after the Intermountain Late Model Series, and it was a club, a racers-type ran situation, and it was in poor health, down 11, 12 cars at the shows. The promoters were getting more and more disgruntled with that program. And I knew that I didn't want to go in and run for presidency of it or anything like that, because I would have been answering to racers, and I just don't think that's how these things get healthy.
Yeah.
So I basically did a nasty takeover, and I say nasty only because there were a lot of people that didn't buy into it. They'd been around the Intermountain deal a long time. So that's how it all started. I just started a new corporation, wrote my own rule book, and went out and sold the show. So you asked where we race. We race at Rocky Mountain Raceway in Salt Lake City. We race in Twin Falls at Magic Valley Speedway. We race State Line for Joe Dolefeld one time for the 200. And there is a possibility here in Boise. There's that liquor. Do you hear me? I sound
yeah, like yeah. That really comes over well on the radio.
Yeah, I got a face for radio. Oh, thank you for my second drink, sir. He just brought me another cocktail. Thank you. This is going to get good. So anyway, there's a situation happening here where we might be able to run in Boise a couple of times this year. So we don't run a ton of places.
But Mike, you guys have a very successful organization, and I got to applaud you, because it's not cookie cutter. There's no rules in your group that aren't there with good thought. And maybe, you know, our listeners in Western Washington haven't had a chance probably to see a lot of your shows. Talk about some of the things that you might do differently and why you do them differently that have allowed you to be successful.
Well, Tom, first of all, I adore my racers. I think the racers need to be treated with a great deal of respect. I think at the same time, you know, I call it a benevolent dictatorship. I think that you have to have respect from your racers. You have to respect them. That's the first premises for this series. Is I, honest to God, I my drivers' meetings, I've said this before, I'm really compassionate. I'm emotional. I'm fiery. If a butt needs to be chewed, I am there to chew it, and if it needs to be hugged and loved on, I'm there to hug and love on it. With that being said, I think some of the things that make us stand out, especially in the Washington model of late model racing, our 20-car invert is probably something that I take a lot of grief for, unless you come and run with us. That's one thing. The second thing I do is I don't pay to win. I pay off of points garnered during the night from qualifying all the way through to the end of the main event. So, you know, if a guy starts up front and wins the race, he's going to make fifth, sixth, seventh place money. You start 20th in one of my shows and run it up to fourth, you might be the guy who collects the big money at the end of the night. Now, that doesn't mean we don't give a trophy to the winner, and that's the guy that won the main event, whoever it may be, whether, and I got to tell you, we probably haven't had a pole winner in the whatever amount of races we've ran. I don't think we've had a pole winner. Well, we might have. Eddie McKean might have done it to me once, and Rip Michaels might have done it once. But those are probably the two things that stand us apart. The other thing I think that stands us apart is our rule package, and it's been the same for 5 years, and I'm really proud of that. I think that rules need to be left alone in order to grow. I've said that it's pretty cool to get on some of these racing classified websites and see the term Rocky Mountain Challenge Series car, made of, in other words, we've got cars now that are coming on the market that are specific to our series. I find that real, I feel that real satisfying and encouraging. So, you know, Tom, I believe that my guys are all there to help each other. I don't have any prima donnas. I don't really allow it. I've kicked some guys out of my series at the end of a bad day where I see that there's no future for either one of us. I say, hey, you know what? Let's do each other a favor and you go race somewhere else.
In
another millennium. And those are the things I think you need to do in front of your core group of guys. Let them know that you're there to make sure that the racing's fair. And I've got some other things I want to tell you, but I want to give you guys a chance. So,
well, one of the things I saw on the internet the other day where Scott Ellsworth and Dr. Jarrett came out with, they're going to do double file restarts. And of course, you know, the blood started, you could hear the screaming, you know, on the internet. And,
I read it. Yeah.
And I happened to know one of the people who commented on it. And my daughter was going to see that person. I said, tell him he's getting old and he's a puss, you know, but what would you tell your racers? I mean, how do you sell 20 car inverts when, you know, people in the Northwest are having a hard time selling 10?
Well, I think my guys want to learn how to drive, Tom. I honestly believe, now you guys got some awesome drivers over there. Don't take this the wrong way. But I think in order to train a racer, they got to pass race cars. They don't need to start up front and run four or five guys around for 125 laps. And that's what I see. I've announced tour races. I've been a big supporter of the Northwest Series. I've been a big supporter of the Southwest Series. But I can't stand 6 and 8 car inverts. I think they rip the fans off that are buying these tickets. I think that you've got to provide side-by-side racing at every corner. And you don't do it. You know, I can tell you guys, and you've all seen it because you've all been there. I have watched races at Yakima. I've watched tour shows. And the leader is just starting to get into the lap traffic, and there's a flipping yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, there goes the race. Same thing will happen 20 laps later. There they go into the lap traffic. Start to get in there, boom, yellow. It's discouraging, it's disgusting, and it's misaligned as far as I'm concerned. This 20-car invert, I got to tell you, I've always felt a little bit, and this is going to sound bad, but I always felt like late model racing in Washington was somewhat misguided. That doesn't mean they don't have great race car drivers over there, but I don't know that they've really understood what the fan goes through to go get a ticket and be in the stands. I've got followers that follow us around now, and so did the Northwest Tour when it was strong. I was one of them. But I just think in this economic times, the promoters trying to sell tickets and pay these big purses to the guys, and mine's a little purse, but, you know, they're trying to pay these bigger purses to bring good racing to their fans, and then we go in and disappoint them. Uh-huh. Can't happen that way. So this cone deal, this is funny, and I'm probably letting something out of the bag, and I'm sure Jerry and Scott are listening to me. But, you know, when we were at Warpa, those guys came to me, and they really would love to do a 20-car invert. I think they would do it in a heartbeat, but I think they felt like this cone deal is, or, you know, however this, yeah, I call it a cone start, so we all know what we're talking about. They really felt like that was in place of the 20-car invert, and you know what? They very well could be right. They very well could be right. So I applaud them for taking a step towards doing what the crowd needs to see. I think it's wonderful.
Well, I had a discussion with Scott, many discussions about that, and that's one of the things that I told him. I said, you know what? Take the NASCAR rule book and examine every piece of it. That's the direction you kind of are headed, and question why, because I think it's out of whack, and to try and take Sunday, what happens on Sunday, and apply it to Saturday night is dead wrong, and I did some of it, so I'm not standing here, you know, standing at the pulpit preaching. I'm out back with everybody else that's in racing, and I think we do, you know, you're right. We need to look at those things and change it. Nothing should be sacred, whether it's double file restarts or inverts or whatever. And, you know, I heard Monroe, they started the double file restart last year, and I looked at it, and a couple times it didn't work early on, but I got to tell you, it makes it better. And sometimes it costs you, sometimes it helps you, but your point's valid. If you want to race, you got to start 20th and pass cars, not first and, you know, run up front all night and not pass anybody and win.
I look at the NASCAR rule book as a recipe book for failure. It's not around. It failed. For whatever reason, we can beat that around for weeks why it's not here, and we can blame it on Daytona Beach and all that. The recipe failed all the way through that rule book. And you know what? If NASCAR had to do it over again, do you think they'd write that book again?
No. Oh, no.
But they saw no way to put it in reverse. That's why it's not there. So we've got all these fresh pages of white paper to rewrite it. And that's what guys like Jerry and I and Scott got to do. We got to rewrite that rule book and forget about NASCAR.
Mike, the thing
watch it on Sunday, have fun.
Yeah, the thing that impressed me about your presentation that you gave at WARPA, in addition to your just flat out coming out and worshiping at the idol of the vodka bottle, was.
That's low, Steve.
But I can be backed up on it. The thing that impressed me about you and how you operate is that I think you write out your rule book to satisfy as many people as possible. You try and satisfy, obviously, the promoter because you want to come back to whatever racetrack you run your series at. You want the fans in the seats, so you provide them with a guide. They have the potential, you know, if he wants to win this race, he's got to get around 20 really good race cars to do it. And you modify the rules to allow the racers to be in the race. It seems to me you took a lot of the pettiness out of your rule book. The thing I liked the most that you said at WARPA was the fact that you don't have a ride height rule. Because why penalize a guy if he is 3 7/8 of an inch off the ground or 4 1/4 inches off the ground? You know, that's part of the pettiness I think that you brought up earlier about how NASCAR's rule books are just, according to you, messed up.
Well, I looked at every rule, and I questioned the experts, honestly, guys, because I may appear to be a brain surgeon, but in honesty, I'm not.
I never made that mistake.
Well, I thought one of you were going to ask me to do a brain surgery later, and I didn't want to have to deal with that. But my point is that if you really go through these rule books and ask the right guys, you know, you're going to get the right answer. And I think that, I went through, I don't know how many rule books on the internet, and I spent way, way too much time coming up with the package that I have. And you know, the part of the problem, guys, is that you have to be able to explain your rule book at the same time. You can't just write a rule and expect guys to accept it without having something to back it up. And I think that that's what happens to a lot of guys is they go through and they write these rules and they try to back them up and they can't do it. And I spent the money both on the dyno, comparing, I don't know how many motor builders that I've talked to, and you know, Tom, and Steve, I don't know all of your background, but Tom and I have had several talks about this. And, you know, you go out, and I feel like a lot of late model racing, the rule books kind of developed around Phoenix International Raceway. I think that 1 mile track presented a lot of goofy rules for late models because of the NASCAR tour being able to go to Phoenix. And I think when you back out the Phoenix rules and you're dealing with these carburetors, and yeah, there's guys that make $3,000 390s, but you know what? They were all built on the premise of going to run a 1 mile racetrack. And these are the things that you need to look at. I didn't want to spend $2,000 out of my pocket on dyno time. That was the last thing I wanted to do, but I needed data to back up what I was telling these guys I was going to do. And there are so many racers out there, and we read it every day on Racing West. If you follow that website, we got guys that are experts, but they got nothing to back it up with. So when I talked to Joe Dolefeld about rules for the 200, we're in a little dilemma right now over carburetors. You know, Scott and Jerry have let this new, the later Busch carburetor come into the series and move the boosters around and all this, and I'm still stuck in the dark ages with the 390 Tour legal type carburetor. But at the Idaho 200 on a quarter mile racetrack, am I going to worry about that guy having another 8 horsepower? I don't know that I am, because last year quick time was set by a $10,000 484 horsepower motor. So I had that motor that set quick time. I had it on the dyno. I can bring the dyno sheet for it. I know exactly what the motor is. So those are the things that I think racers get all wadded up about is, you know, well, I need that open carburetor rule, or I need this, or I need that. No, you don't. You know what you need? To get through the corners. That's what you need to do, is get through the ends. So anyway, everybody says, oh, I love your rule book. Well, it's no, again, it wasn't anything that came from Jesus.
It's not rocket science, huh?
Well, if you go to the Rocky Mountain Series, website, you know, first thing I noticed is Mike's box, and that's his pulpit or wherever it is. He gets up on his box and he starts, and you did a good job of explaining some of the things why you do what you do. And obviously it's working. When you look at, you know, late model racing that's been in a mess for the last how many years? And in 2006, you had 34 cars earn points. Last year, you had 10 more. You went to 44 cars. You know, obviously, you're doing something right. I mean, another thing that marvels me is your champion last year. You know that kid?
Never heard of him.
Yeah, your son. And I got to tell you, that's probably one of the biggest accomplishments. How the hell you ever got your son racing in your series that you officiate, and, you know, it's like not a problem. So, obviously, you're doing something right.
Well, I'm really proud of that, guys, but to be honest with you, it's probably one of the worst things to have. I wonder sometimes how successful I would be if David retired. I mean that in a loving way. Obviously, I love my son, but I got to tell you, on race day, we're probably the furthest from being dad and son.
Really?
Unless something was to happen on that racetrack. I hold him to a standard higher than anybody in the series.
Right.
My brother spends a lot of money on that race team. I am totally uninvested in that team. I have not a thin dime. In fact, at one point about 4 years ago, I owned the carburetor to it, and my brother came and brought me a check so that I could make a total separation between that team and myself. And the other thing that you guys don't know is I have a this is breaking news. I'm surprised TMZ isn't here to cover this, but I have a debilitating eye disease that keeps me from officiating a race. I do not make any calls, and the people that are close to me, the run of my series, know about my eye disease, and they know what I'm going through. So I think they have enough faith in my officials that they've seen what David's held to. The other thing that they hear is me on the radio. And last year, at one of the last races, my kid got in the back of somebody and screwed the fender up, and it let the hood fly up on the car, and he was trying to draw a yellow flag, and he was running around there. We were black flagging him. I came on the radio for everybody to hear, and, I mean, I gave him the same butt chewing I'd have given anybody on that racetrack. And at the end of the night, I had these guys coming up to me and say, "Hey, we heard how you talked to the kid. That was cool." I said, "You know, at that point, he's not my son. He's a competitor. He's causing me some grief. He's going to get grief." So, but you're right, Steve. You are absolutely right. It is amazing that the thing's successful with that situation going on because Steve, who's the guy, the SRL guy, Steve Fensler, uh-huh. You know, every time Jason, his son, who's a hell of a stock car driver, every time he races, the poor guy takes more grief on the Internet. It's sickening. And I don't know. I've just been blessed that way.
Yeah, you did well. Well, what's coming up for 2009? You got your schedule ready to go?
We're out of business, baby.
Are you? Done?
This is my farewell. Yeah, this last cocktail.
It's called farewell, not farewell, farewell tour.
You know, I don't have my schedule done. And I thought about that tonight before I came on the radio. I thought, you know, here these guys are going to ask me, "Well, Mike, you got your schedule?" And I'm like, "Well, you know, I don't." Doug Binstock down at Rocky Mountain Raceway in Salt Lake, you know, he's got a drag strip, an NHRA drag strip. He's got a rock climbing deal. He's got a motocross track. And now you're going to laugh at this because the last 5 years we've ran there, our dates haven't changed one weekend. But every year it's like pulling teeth with Doug. "Doug, are we okay?" "Mike, don't rush me on this." So I could give you a schedule and say that I'm pretty comfortable with it, and I think we're about 90% there. But I still don't know about Boise, and I still don't know everything about Twin Falls at this point.
Two last ones. Any chance you come?
And here's another reason I'm blessed. You see me getting asked on the Internet, "Where's the schedule, you moron, you fat moron?" I don't get any of that. You know, I email my guys and say, "Hey, we should have something in a week or two," and nobody gives me any grief. It's wonderful.
Last two questions out of me. Any chance you're coming to Western Washington?
No.
Warrants?
Next question.
You got warrants?
There's an answer, Tom.
The last question I had, and going through, I noticed that you most of your competitors are from Idaho and Utah. You have five drivers from the state of Nevada. How many trips to Nevada to find these drivers, and what drinking establishment did you find those five drivers in?
Well, they're all drunks, too. That's a pretty cool story. I'm glad you brought it up. You know, I have a group of guys in Salt Lake, Jim Wolfenstein and Wade Fry. And these guys are, Wolfenstein is out of Pahrump, Nevada. They call him the governor of Pahrump. he's got a pretty decent sized construction company there. He's really good friends with Wade Fry in Salt Lake. I made a mistake. Jim Wolfenstein's from Pahrump, which is right outside Vegas. They came and ran some races early in the, you know, early 4 or 5 years ago, and they have a Thane Alderman in Las Vegas, has been racing there since Vegas was built. These are the greatest group of drivers, racers. They're the most fun. They're all LDS. They're all Mormon. Well, Thane Alderman isn't Mormon, but, and then they grabbed a guy named Rick Taylor, who's got a bunch of money, owns an oil derrick somewhere, so you can imagine the money that guy's got. And they started racing with me, and they come to every show. It was 1,100 miles, and all five of them showed up at State Line. And if you don't think that made me emotional, watch those guys come pulling in there. And I got to tell you guys this, it was more than I could emotionally handle. They climbed down out of them trucks and said, Menninger, the only reason we're here is because of you. And Thane said, if you asked us to run in a dirt track in the field somewhere that you hadn't built the track yet, we would come race. And that, to me, is what this series is all about. Those guys sum up to me why I do what I do. And I love them because they are such a proponent of the series. They'll get on their soapboxes in Vegas. I ask them, do you want me to come to Vegas? I'll bring the donkey show to Vegas. You want me to come to Vegas? And they said, no. Vegas will screw with us. We don't need them. And they live there, for God's sake. So,
I forgot what the heck the question was I even asked. Okay. So that's
you asked how I grabbed these guys out of Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah, what bar? That's right. No,
yeah, that's it.
Yeah, the bar.
We'll
yeah,
save that. We'll save that for the next time you're on. Mike, we've got to get up on a break. I just want to let people know, though, if you want to get information on the Rocky Mountain Challenge Series, you can get on to rmcsracing.com, and you can read some of Mike's really good writing on there. And, Mike, one last thing, a little something from the studio audience here, if you don't mind. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, and you'll probably hear that when you pay your bar tab tonight, too.
No, it was free. I came to a friend's house.
Oh, there you go. There
you have no friends.
All that bar noise in the background.
Well, we will continue to check in on your series this year. It's been a blast having you on, man.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Talk to you later.
All right.
Thanks,
that
Michael.
That was Mike Menninger from the Rocky Mountain Challenge Series. And what a great guy. We could just do 2 hours alone with him, but we've got many more to come. So why don't you stick with us? We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Jeff Barkshire. We've still got Andrew Cadell coming up, Kelly Hart, and then our replay of the Bob Fox interview from last year. Stick with us. This is North Sound Racing on North Sound 1380 KRKO Radio.